Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with five sketch ideas. I'm Andy.
And I'm Alistair George William Trombley Birchall. And Andy, we're here to have a hit chit chat, but have you ever had a hit chit chat? A hit.
This
is going to hopefully be a hit chit chat, but have you ever had a chit anything else, like a chit eat? Have you ever had a chit walk?
A chit walk. That does make sense. Do you want to go for a little chit walk?
That's what you're talking about, right?
But does it only describe certain types of conversation? You know, can you have a chit D&M or a chit? Or it's a modifier. And it can modify anything. Yeah, it could be a chit. You're right. It could be a chit walk.
Well, what's the difference between a chat and a chit chat?
That's true. It feels like they're the same thing.
Oh, I know. But right? I think a chit chat, firstly, feels shorter.
And it feels lighter
and more nimble and maybe more fun.
So there's a lot of online, a lot of TV chat shows. We're going to have the first TV chit chat show.
Sure.
And it's going to seem a lot like a chat show, but there's crucial differences. Subtle, but crucial.
Yeah.
It's shorter.
I know, but you're not suggesting what they're going to be. You're just saying how crucial they are. And while I love knowing the level of cruciality, I feel like we've got to get down to what it actually is. Is it faster? What? Is it like on a conveyor belt? You know?
I think it should be. I think chit-chat does – you're absolutely right. Chit-chat feels like something that you would have on an escalator for as long as it takes to go on an escalator, right?
So, I mean, you know, like a sushi train, right? Could you just be talking to people as you go by them?
I just had an idea for I don't know exactly what it is, but it's people who've been trapped together in a cabin in the woods for like 4 years, okay? And for whatever reason, they still haven't got past chit-chat. They haven't got any deeper than small talk.
Okay.
I just think,
so they're stuck in a cabin in the woods.
Yes. They can't leave. They've got a supply of food and they've been trapped together, these two people. But they still don't know each other very well. Yeah. It's still very superficial. It's still, you know, ooh, cold today, or where'd you get that hat? They haven't scratched the surface.
I think you're talking about what many people's marriages have been over history.
Sure. I think what you're describing is male friendship.
Andy, you know that's not true. That's not true. You're just playing into stereotypes for comedic effect. And you know what? I'm not going to fall for it.
I saw in the street the other day.
Yeah.
I saw two guys having a chat, right? And they were friends.
Yeah.
I don't think they were more than friends. I don't think they were in a relationship.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure, right? But they were very intimate, the way that, you know, they had their arms around each other.
Yeah.
And they were like in this sort of conspiratorial huddle almost and laughing and enjoying the conversation. And I thought it looked really great. So,
but how
I'm
do you
thinking
know that they were just
out,
friends?
Well, I think that the two women who were behind them also talking were their wives.
Right.
And I'm sorry if I'm wrong about that, if I've assumed things in the wrong way, but I was looking at this conversation, it seemed like two very close friends, but who were also comfortable being in physical contact with each other.
Yeah,
and it
sure.
it really moved me. I thought, that is amazing. That's not something you really get in male friendships.
No, I mean, they might be.
And I felt jealous.
They might be conjoined twins.
They could have
joined non-identical twins.
This is a great great topic for a Mythbusters type show, right? Or you know, we're going to investigate. There's a rumor of a male friendship where the two guys are very comfortable being in physical contact with each other, but we, on our show, we set out and we investigate that paranormal sighting, and we debunk it. We prove that they're actually conjoined twins, and everyone can breathe a sigh of relief and be like, "Ah, it's like the X-Files."
I mean, it gives
there's
me
a reasonable, rational, scientific explanation for this that has nothing to do.
It gives me an idea, which is it's called Truth Busters. You find things that are actually true, and then you find other explanations for them.
Mm.
They're true, but I don't want them to be true. Oh, yuck!
Don't want them to be true. You can. Here's a little story you can tell yourself so that your worldview isn't affected in any way. It's called a convenient lie. It's the opposite of an inconvenient truth. A comfortable, falsehood.
No,
it's called a comfortable falsehood.
Now, I have to go back to this idea that you brought up before, because I didn't write it down, because I don't think that there's any comedy in it yet.
Okay, great.
Now, two people are in a cabin, right? Now, so and then we have to somehow show that they've been in there for 4 years, and they're going, how's the weather? But then we also have to somehow make it seem like they don't, we have to make it clear they never talk about anything else.
Yeah.
So...
That's tricky, isn't it, to make it clear that they're not talking about something.
Yeah, I think that is hard.
Like,
And I think while the concept of people's a relationship never developing, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's essentially like somebody who's very short, right? It's like laughing at someone who's very short. You know, they just never grew any further. It's a relationship of small stature.
It's stunted. It's in a state.
That's right. They were smoking too much, and they got stuck in a chit chat. Stage of the
cycle,
relationship forming, and they stunted its growth. I mean, I don't know if any, go.
I'm thinking about like you know people talk about getting in the friend zone. You know, when you want to be in a conversation in a relationship with somebody, if you'd like your relationship to go further, there's this toxic idea of being friend zoned. Well, these guys haven't even made it into the friend zone, right? They're still acquaintance zoned or stranger zoned, even though they're in this situation. And the will they won't they tension of their narrative. It's not will they, won't they sex thing.
Will they become acquaintances?
Yeah. Will they ever have a get anywhere with their conversation? I can't describe this anymore.
It's a will they, won't they, but it's about anal sex. Oh. It's a couple. It's Ross and Rachel, and they've done everything else.
Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness.
The audience is just are on the edges of their seat wondering whether or not Jennifer will eventually peg Ross or whether Ross will eventually peg Rachel. He will wear a strap on.
Yeah, I think that's great, isn't it? And all the water cooler conversation around the table. I mean, of course, there will be the episode in which they eventually do seal the deal, right? And then after that, there'll be this awkward phase where Ross is where Ross goes and has anal sex with some other women.
Oh yeah, we were on.
You know, after they got together,
I thought we were on a butt break. he's getting married. to somebody
Rachel
else.
Rachel is pegging Joey for
say,
a while.
Ross, do you take Emily to as your loving wedding wife? And he says, anal sex with Rachel.
Oh, no. Oh, gosh.
Oh, I am going to have anal sex with Rachel.
Now, what are you calling this TV show?
Friends.
All right, because it's still called Friends.
This is in an alternate universe where Friends kept going.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. You know,
Friends is on season 43.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, what else can we write
about?
They're
running out of ideas.
It's
the
like
one with you know, like, the butt stuff.
Like that time that guy wrote a 9/11 episode of Seinfeld.
Mm.
And then, so this one is the anal episode of Friends. The anal sex episode.
Write it down, Alistair. Write it down. God, I hope people are listening to this at their ceramics class. they've just dipped back in. The person who once tried to play the podcast to the ceramics class, and we were doing some awful, I think it was testicle-based stuff.
No, I think it might have been about
episode.
Long boobs. That's where we kind of came up long with the idea
boobs.
Of long tit.
Ah, the long tit. Yeah, right. Okay. They haven't spoken to anybody in the class for the last 5 years, but now they've just plucked up the courage. To put on another episode of Two in the Think Tank, and it's this one. They haven't learned a thing.
No, they're still, and they're in a class, which is the worst bit because they haven't learned a single thing.
They haven't learned a single ceramics.
It was actually
technique.
A ceramics They've been studio where they made it. They made it for work.
What?
But that's okay. That's okay.
I don't understand what you just told me.
I said it was a ceramics studio, like as in, like instead of a class, they actually made ceramics for a living,
right?
And sold them.
Yep. Oh, that's what it was. Oh, okay. You're sorry. I thought you were tagging it with a comic twist, and you were doing the exact opposite. You were adding a tag of factual information at the end to. Remove some of the comedy. It's,
you know, yeah, less than a tag. I was kind of replacing the whole animal, you know, rather than tagging it and then releasing it.
Yeah.
When you when you talk about tagging
skin
a joke,
tags,
you should be around, allowed tags. To write information on them.
Yeah, you should.
You should.
I was thinking. You
know, yeah.
For me, it's like a graffiti tag. You know, and it's now that we've got that that stuff, that spray on skin stuff, where you can spray it onto people's burns and that sort of thing, and it uses stem cells to help new skin to grow. Now people are using that for graffiti out in the streets, right? They've got it in. They're shaking up aerosol cans of spray on skin and spraying it onto the walls of buildings and the side of trams, and then skin is growing on there with hair and that sort of thing, and they're writing, you know, obscene stuff, or it's just the next frontier in graffiti.
Yeah, so it's like a living
with
skin.
Human skin,
and so it grows hair. Does that mean that it has the potential to grow a full person, like that it was, you know, like maybe it started as a bit of graffiti, but then eventually it grows a face and like some legs and, but then it says
I
like.
I mean, I suppose you could spray it all over like a statue or something like that in the city, and then it would have the form of a human man.
But then you would have to.
But
like,
I don't know. For me, I don't know if it forms a sentient being. I would prefer if it was just a layer of skin in the shape of somebody's
I know you would
tag.
Prefer that, Andy, but you know, this person is here now. You've created them, and even though you prefer them to not have graffiti people in your in your town, and I understand that, you know, you rural people are less capable of accepting people of that have differences.
Yes. That's right.
But you've created this person, and now they're here, and they're a person that is made out of skin and flesh, and they're but they're in the shape of the word bunta. Okay. And they have their eyes on the B, and they have a foot at the base of the first O, and they have an arm at the top of the A.
Yeah,
and or maybe one of the they got fingers at the bottom of one of the A's, and they got another eye at the top of the A. They got a nose
on the
T. I'm
wondering if the work for the doll graffiti removal people, though, still have to come around and murder these skin graffiti people with axes or machine guns or something as part of their as part of their graffiti removal.
I think job. What happens is a person gets attacked by one of them. One of them jumps off the wall and then attacks it. I think it's probably Bunta. And unless they've got a different name to what they're spelling out, you know, maybe his name is Mark or something like that.
It's an alias.
Well, Bunta is, it's just, you know.
You don't think Bunta is his Christian name?
Well, I don't know. You know, I just don't know. I'm just saying that because your body spells out a word, it doesn't mean that's your name.
Oh, I see.
You know what I mean?
Yes. I thought you were talking about the graffiti artist was Bunta.
Well, the graffiti artist was Bunta. But then by writing out Bunta, you would assume that the person who's made out of flesh, out of the graffiti that's made out of flesh, would then be called Bunta because his body spells out Bunta. But of course, if I make...
But I don't think it's... I think it's like Frankenstein's monster, right? Your Bunta isn't the graffiti, right?
Sure.
Bunta is the name of the graffiti artist.
Yeah, but you know... But
this the monster is called Bunta's graffiti.
Yes, but it's now a person, so I don't think you can just refer to it as graffiti anymore, especially once it leaves the wall.
I think you can.
Eh? Plus, Frankenstein's monster isn't written in the shape of the word Frankenstein. Isn't like... You know what I mean? So there's less confusion with that one, even though there has already been a lot of confusion.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, there's going to be so much confusion with this.
And you
can
imagine once these flesh people, you know, flesh graffiti people, they start, you know, like there's one on one wall, one on another one, they'd start talking to each other. And then they would start creating a little society there, you know?
Yeah. Would they peel themselves off the wall eventually and crawl around like a sort of a sentient sort of carpet?
Yeah, I think once they... I guess they're kind of like the flatheads or the souls of the sort of land world because they're flat like a flathead. And then they travel... I mean, I imagine they would just travel with their feet and their fingers and crawl along the ground. But then you could prop them up. But then they would be looking at the sky because I think they're kind of two-dimensional.
So they do have feet and fingers, you think?
Eh?
Well, they'd be tiny and vestigial little fingers.
Well, that's what we were saying, is that
end,
the different part letters would grow, you know, because they grow a full person eventually on there. Of course. But it's still in the shape of a bunta.
I think it's a great idea. I'm very excited about it. I'm not sure what the origin story of this situation is, whether or not it's kids deliberately choosing to use the human skin or whether or not there was just a mix-up at the spray can factory.
Could be
where the
lady.
They mislabeled.
You know the lady who made it, who made the skin? Yeah, she probably
Catherine
has a lot
something.
At home in her garage. You know, early designs. And her kid. She's got a kid who's just reached teenagehood.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's getting really into...
goes into the garage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's because, you know, because with graffiti artists, I think you're supposed to steal the paint as well.
Really?
I think that's a big, was a big part of that culture. You know?
It's an interesting part of it.
Why? Well, why do you think that?
What? I mean, I don't know. I don't know that a lot of artistic cultures have rules about how you get the materials. Maybe I'm wrong, but
let's say in the in jazz there was kind of like a culture of like you shouldn't get the notation, the music. You should just learn songs and your instrument through by ear. You know, mm-hmm. I guess in comedy we feel like that jokes you have to get from your own mind and experience rather than have other people write it yes. for you.
Yes.
There's kind of things like
some
that.
Some of us do feel that. That's correct.
Some of us do. Some of us, those of us who don't really make any, you know, much money on the stand-up scene, we do feel that. But those of us who make lots of money and release things very regularly, not so much.
I mean, could you do that with other other types? You know, could it be a restaurant that has that ethos where they only cook with things that they've shoplifted? Or is there possibly a funnier example? You know,
let's see,
architect.
Well, because often there are restaurants that are kind of themed like that. There was one that I went to once accidentally, where they were like, "Oh, we only have food that's been bought in a 50-mile radius or a 50-kilometer radius or something like that." Yeah. You know, they put restrictions on themselves.
Local.
You know, something that's been grown in a house, something that we found in the sewer.
Yes.
That's not ideal. That would be, but what a challenge. What a creative challenge.
Wow.
I guess there could be garbage, things that have been found, like that have been dumpster dived for.
Oh, I'm sure that exists somewhere in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the food regulations here would probably make it difficult to get the place licensed. But I think technically, if you're doing it only with things that are stolen, as long as they can't track you down and pin it on you directly, you might be able to get away with that. As long as all the food is still within, you know, expiry dates, etc.
Yeah. The problem is having a paper trail,
and also all the employees. They're also having their wages stolen in an elaborate wage theft. This would be a great, great new venture for George Columbaris to use his skills that he developed in wage theft for running his restaurant empire and now applying that to the entire business model. Everything's stolen.
Oh, imagine
not
if
just
you
the wages.
Could you use wage theft as a process for processing food? Could you somehow steal the food's wages? I don't know how this works. I guess then you'd have to be cooking people.
Sometimes.
It's a cannibal. I guess you could do that. A cannibal tribe could eat food that's only been made by stealing their wages because they've died of starvation. And then you would eat
them.
Yeah,
but they wouldn't be very good. I don't know that eating creatures that have died of starvation.
Oh.
I don't know that they, you know, you'd be able to get the choicest cuts of.
What is the most delicious way of having someone die, a person die, do you think, that makes them the most delicious?
Well, it's probably obesity or something like that, who ate themselves to death, maybe. But, I mean, I suppose the idea of a starvationarian.
Yeah.
Somebody who only eats creatures that have died of starvation is an interesting idea.
Yeah.
I presume it would be very lean and it would perhaps be a good way to lose weight, like as a diet.
Yeah.
You know. I'm a dietarian. I have only eaten things that
are on diets. Oh, yeah, that's true. I guess so, yeah. I mean, there's a few things that you eat that are still alive, like what? Like I guess a spider while you sleep. Okay, look, I'll try and write one of these down. What is it? Starvationarian? Not great, but you know.
I mean, yeah. No, I guess it's something. I was thinking about a new form of. Oh, no,
the problem
right.
is that
no,
the,
all I was,
the pain
yes.
they undergo actually makes it taste better. You can taste the pain. It releases like a like if it did if it, like that's that would be the most awful thing created by the human, you know, like by bodies if like something underwent torture if it made it taste better.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And you know, that probably is the case for certain types of factory farming. I mean, that's basically what it is with foie gras, isn't it? Like you're force feeding these geese through a tube to make their liver inflamed. Like surely that's a form of torture.
Oh yeah.
That then does make apparently their liver more delicious.
Wow.
So yeah, you've really hit upon something there.
Yeah, Alistair. Well, there you go. You know, very clever in that way. I guess it's just if you say anything horrible, you go, actually that does exist, and you go, oh, I'm a genius. I'm a genius of horrible things.
Mm. Yeah, it's a shame there's not, you know, there's no easy way to express that, you know, or to make money from that, from your ability to create horrible stuff. Maybe we should become horror film writers.
I think that there's actually, you know, it's one of the few it's one of the few genres that just has a built-in audience for the whole genre.
Yeah.
Because people just want to see things that can potentially scare them, you know? So I think horror and comedy are actually not that far apart. So I would be into that. And I think it should have something to do with things coming out of people's nipples, particularly men's nipples. You know?
Yeah, great.
Oil.
I think the nipple is probably an unexplored.
You know?
Yeah. Just, yeah.
Like, I mean, especially imagine that if it's like, it's something that also makes you super combustible. Like, imagine it's like if it was like a hydrocarbon that's coming out of your nipple.
Oh, that's a really good idea.
Yeah. And you wake up and the bed is always soaked in it.
Well, could it be something that is sort of going around the town? Like a lot of the time, you know, it's, you know, for like the Ring or It Follows or something like that. Yeah. There's this something that's passed from person to person. And it is that, you know, your nipples start secreting a high octane hydrocarbon, right? That pours down your front and renders you extremely flammable.
Yeah.
And then you, like, if you get near any sources of ignition or anybody who's smoking or anything like that, mate, and it's great. You know what? It's great if a film is a metaphor for something. Maybe our film could be a metaphor for secondhand smoking, in that, there's a lot of people in this town who smoke and flick ash around, but it's those close to them, the ones who've recently experienced hydrocarbon nipple leakage, that are catching fire.
Yeah, I mean,
people love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But the fact that actually that there's actually smoking in it makes it less of a metaphor. But but that's fine. I'm happy with that as well.
Yeah,
you know what? I've been less worried about like secondhand smoke since finding out that just having like gas in your house is a much worse thing.
Mm. I mean, I feel like our wood fire in our house is probably doing also way worse than the gas.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
You know, I'm always opening the door, having smoke billow out into the room.
Really? Isn't there like a vent or something like that? It's supposed to take it away?
Yeah, there is. There is. But sometimes, you know, if there's if the wood's a little bit wet or something like that, there's more smoke than can be than escape up the chimney.
Sure.
And sometimes when you open the door, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, it's just another small way in which I'm poisoning my children.
That's okay, Andy. I think that's great. And when they listen, when they're old enough to
texture.
I mean, luckily there's so much of this podcast.
Assuming they make it to old enough.
Yeah. Luckily there's so much of this podcast that none of our family members will ever listen to it, all of it.
Yeah.
And
yes.
I think you're pretty safe, even though you're putting this there technically in writing. It's in writing of ones and zeros. And you're officially, essentially signing your own, like, you know, like you're gonna lose whatever the court case is gonna be, when your, you know, children sue you at some point or whatever like that. You know,
tell me what you think of this idea.
I'm looking forward to it.
Is there any way we could build a computer?
Yeah,
right. Where all the ones and zeros that are written into the hard drive are somehow written in beautiful cursive. In longhand, you know, in handwriting. People love handwriting. Yeah. What about a computer that somehow uses handwriting inside The hard drive, when things are written onto the hard drive.
This is so good instantly, I'm writing it down. A computer.
When you laughed, I couldn't tell.
Andrew, don't worry. I'm not sure how I feel about it for real either. So it's like this imperceivable thing
I guess it's a new classier type of computer.
Yeah. But even like Andy, in actual computers, like on like a in a solid state drive, okay?
Yeah. They're not writing an actual one or zero. Is that what you're about to tell me?
So are you describing about like the idea of a one or zero inside like an on or off kind of electrical channel deep inside the computer? At some point it interprets it as a one and a zero, but they are in cursive.
No, I think in my computer they are literally written as literal ones and zeros onto very small, but in longhand cursive, onto the spinning disk. And then the technology to read that back would have to be more advanced. I imagine, this is just for me, I imagine that the little laser that reads them is wearing a monocle or possibly some of those opera glasses.
Sure, maybe a beret.
Because this is a classy computer. Maybe a scarf. Yeah.
And
it does it by candlelight. There's a candle in there.
Could it use even more sort of like flowery kind of things and actually use like, what about like, you know, it has
a pen that is made from a big feather.
Yeah. Well, what about instead of like a one, well, instead of ones and zeros, it's the word exquisite and the word superb.
Reprobate.
Yeah. Reprobate. Exquisite and reprobate. In cursive.
Those are the two. That's the binary.
That's the
when you think about it, it can be binary. Can be anything. Any two states.
That's right. It doesn't have
and
to be
why
one
not
zero.
The words exquisite and reprobate could, written in longhand.
It could be Andy and Al.
Why can't each of the letters be one of those illuminated letters like the monks used to do on the first page of a book? Each of the ones and zeros. There's a tiny monk in there.
You know,
we used monk technology.
So what's the illuminated letter?
You know, illuminated manuscripts. Those are like ancient books. You know how like sometimes on the first page of the book, the first letter
is big.
Like if there's the word is life. Yeah, it's big. It's in a rectangle. There's little drawings and shit all around
it. Yeah, yeah.
You know. I mean, that's probably going too far. We don't want this thing
What is
this?
I mean, it could be a photograph of you and then a photograph of me.
That would be
That
good.
Could be the binary.
I mean, what could you store in there?
Eh?
You know, like, well, I'm thinking like, I mean, how big is the file? How many of these photos?
Well, this is what's interesting. The binary, Andy, is a photo of you and it's a photo of me, but this is actually, this is something clever I think I'm doing. But, but
everybody brace yourself.
Encoded in the photo is like the DNA of the computer. It's all the hard-coded stuff that you want it to know. So,
yeah.
And so then you could, so anytime any data is lost, you could, you could rebuild the computer from, I don't know, this doesn't make sense where I was going here, but.
No. I think I see what you're saying. So the ones and zeros of the computer, let's forget the photo thing for the time being.
Yeah.
Right? But like each bit, you're saying that each bit of the computer contains the full source code or machine code that is required to run the computer.
Potentially, yeah, right? Something like that.
Maybe this could be a bit blockchain, that every single bit of information in the computer is actually a unique blockchain identity made up of several thousand other bits.
Look, I don't know what the blockchain bit is, but
all right. Sorry.
But let's say it's two. Pardon me. Let's say it's you know it could be let's say you want to have two computers in one, right?
Okay.
It's your computer, it's my computer, right? I don't know why, right? But this is like the marriage between two computers, right? When two computers have a baby, they get the one computer gets all its source code there, and then gets all the source code there. And instead of one and zero, it just points to all that source code. And so it still counts as one bit, right?
Yes.
Because it's just pointing to it. It's just there, hard-coded in, right? That, that, right?
Mm.
But you can always go one step further and get all that information.
Yes.
I don't know what we're doing here. Is this a sketch, Andy?
I don't think it is. Oh. Another thing you could do is instead of ones and zeros, you could have computer or no computer. Okay. Right, and this is sort of a next level language where the one is a computer, the zero is no computer.
Is it this computer?
So we're encoding.
Is it? But is it this computer?
Encoding our data as computers.
Computer or not computer?
Which?
But like when it says computer, is it the computer that it is? Which computer is it talking about?
No. There'd have to be lots of computers. You'd have to have heaps and heaps of computers.
Why?
Right? We're using – because we want to store lots of data, right? And one computer or one no computer equals only one bit of information.
Yeah.
So we'd need lots of computers to store everything we want to store.
Sure. But what I mean is like I understand that there would be – like, you know, in the – oh, so wait. When you say that it's a one and a zero, are you saying like – do you picture that it's not the same one over and over again? You picture that it's a different one?
Yeah, they're different computers.
No. But stop talking about the computers for a second. Just do the ones and zeros, okay? When you picture ones and zeros, right? Like let's say it's like 1011101, right?
Yeah.
I think I always picture that it's always the same one.
Oh, that's really interesting. No, I think they're different ones. I think all the ones are different.
Yeah, right.
You think all the ones are the same?
I just thought that there was just one one and there's only one zero.
No.
And then each location that it's in, it just opens a portal to where that one actually is. Somewhere.
Yeah, the true one.
In the back end of the universe.
Mm. I think what we've hit upon here is philosophy. And I think we're messing with forces we can't begin to understand when we try and talk about this kind of nonsense.
Okay.
It's very specific. But, you know, it's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Are all the ones the same one? You should ask a proper mathematician.
Is there
are they different?
Yeah, but I think do you think that some...
Is the one that I count the same as the one that you count?
Yeah, do you think there are some philosophical questions that are not important? Like, do you think
this might be one of them?
If you talk to a philosopher, do you think that they'd go, well, that question's not important? Or do you think that it's by, you know, like, do you think that if we thought about this for long enough that we could find a way in which it's important and then unlock a secret to the universe? Like, let's say there really was just one one.
Yeah.
Then would the key be to...
Do you think that if we could then find that 1-1 and change it? Imagine that. Imagine if someone found the 1-1, right, in the universe, and they changed it to be like 3 or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, every 1...
Everywhere there's a 1.
...count, there's actually 3 now.
Yeah. Do you think everything would collapse?
I don't know.
Because, I mean, I guess it would only affect Earth because I think we're the only ones who have come up with numbers so far.
I mean, but I think numbers might be a fundamental concept that exists whether or not you use them or not.
Yeah, right. So, okay.
I mean, that's an interesting question, right? So say there's somewhere in the distant universe, right, there's one dwarf star that we have never interacted with and never seen.
Yeah.
Never contacted in any way. Is there really only one of it? And is it one dwarf star if nobody's been there to count it? Is that an interesting question or is that really dumb?
Yeah, but that's a different
thing, right? I mean, does the number one,
thing, right?
does like, the number one like, exist then, but no, but, there? right?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that but the, if you change the 1-1 into a 3, would that affect that one dwarf star? Would there now be three dwarf stars?
Would that now be three dwarf stars?
But then every individual atom would also be into one. Or do you think by being together?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Because then it becomes like the motion stuff that Einstein talked about. Because you can never get an absolute frame of reference, right? You can never find... Then there has to be... There's never like a one truth, you know, like because if I'm throwing a ball up in the air or whatever, it's going up and down. But for somebody, if I'm on a train and somebody's looking at it from over there, it looks like it's going up and, you know, diagonally up and diagonally down.
Yeah.
Or whatever like that. Yeah. And then if somebody else is looking at it from Earth, it looks like I'm spinning around the sun going up and down diagonally or whatever like that. Right. And so it's the same thing with these ones. Right. So that means that because sometimes... it's one dwarf star, but then sometimes it's one of, you know, 6 billion dwarf stars that are in the universe. So it depends the point of view that you see it from.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But, and I so wonder then, where how the like the fundamental of values. Yeah, yeah, that's what I was going to say. I guess the speed of light. The only reason it has the values that it does is because of the units of measurement that we use to measure it. So whether or not there are ones and fives or whatever in the measurement of the speed of light is dependent upon the very specific circumstances in which we're measuring it.
Yeah, I think so.
Right? So do you think that you probably couldn't change the value of the speed of light by changing the value of one. Alistair, do you want to say what you were going to say?
I guess not. But then what would be the speed of light in the numbers version? Oh, I can't remember.
Can you hear me?
It's gone. Everything is... you can only...
Alistair.
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you not
Alistair,
hear me?
Can you hear me? Yeah, okay, great. Yeah, no, I'm just... I wasn't sure if we were having a conversation anymore. Okay, great.
But Andy, can you hear me?
Yes, okay. I can.
This
is not going well. I feel like we were getting too close to something fundamental about the universe.
But the
forces of reality tried to derail our conversation, so we didn't touch on something really big.
Yeah, I think maybe your mind may have glitched.
Yeah, that's also possible.
Actually,
true.
Andy, 3 hours has gone by. no, but like... Wait, what would be the speed of light in this number thing? So let's say if we try to just do the parallel, right? In the Einstein one, it's shape and motion. Wait, is it? No, wait. Or is it speed? Yeah, it's kind of like speed, and it's all sorts of things, isn't it? But what would we look at?
And direction. Yeah.
Oh, I don't think I can do it. I don't think I can do this.
No, I can't do it. It's too much. It's too much. It's like people who do maths in in extra dimensions of space and shit like that. You're like, oh, fuck off.
Yeah.
And there's no hope here. How do you even begin to understand it? How many ideas have we got written down, Alistair? Because I think
two, three,
we might
four,
need to
five,
reset
six,
by
seven.
Going
seven.
Great. And that is in a universe in which the value of 7 is actually 5.
That's right. I mean, somehow it always comes back to like just a bit that we did in magma or whatever. A lot of these things. Anyway, would you like to go to 3 words from a listener?
Yes, desperately.
All right. Well, today's listener, who is a Patreon supporter and has sent in three words, is David Byrne.
David Byrne.
David Bourne.
Thank you, David Byrne.
Bourne. David has sent in three words today. Would you like to try to guess what one of the words is?
Yeah, okay. The first word is timeline.
Timeline? Oh, no. No. But a lot of these things do follow a line of some sort. It is cargo.
Okay. Second word is friction. No, pants. Cargo pants.
Really bad guess. ship.
Cargo ship. Now is the third word going to be pants? God, I'm going to feel stupid. Cargo shipmates. Cargo shipmates.
Cargo shipmates? No, I'm sorry. The answer is cargo ship derailment.
Wow. I mean,
yeah.
What does that mean to you? Are these ships on rails?
I think of a cargo kind of ship as the relationship somebody has with their cargo pants. My cargo ship.
Wow.
Something has happened in which somebody who is very close to their cargo pants, almost exclusively wore cargo pants, something has happened to make them completely go off cargo pants.
Wow.
You know, there's been a cargo ship derailment.
Yeah. What could occur that would cause you to go so anti-cargo pants? I mean, could it be a traumatic experience of putting your hand into one of the pockets and finding like some really old food in there that's just gone really disgusting? And that, it feels like, you know how like you've got to empty out the kids' backpacks at the end of term?
Yeah. Or at the beginning of the term.
Because then when
term.
You go back after the holidays. Yeah, okay. But like you go back at the end of the holidays, the beginning of the new term, and you discover whatever horrible stuff is in there. What's a situation where people who wear cargo pants, right, some subset of people who wear cargo pants, have to go on a break for a period of time in which they wouldn't be wearing cargo pants for a long time and then eventually come back to those cargo pants? Well, now, to answer this question, we need to find who are the people who stereotypically would be found wearing cargo pants.
Well, I mean, there's German tourists. there's people.
Is it Limp Bizkit? Would that be associated with Limp Bizkit,
the wearing of cargo pants? I think that there's somebody who's like a holdout. There's a group for people who are holdouts and reject this woke ideology that cargo pants are bad. Right?
Yes,
and so there's a group of them that not only love cargo pants, but they try to find more and more extreme cargo pants. So that means that they find cargo pants with more pockets. Even more pockets on them, and they actually try to carry more and more things in there. So they have to have.
Love this idea, Alistair, of this cargo pant culture, right? And it's like, you know, like people who are really into body modification or something like that, or really bit into Nerf guns, you know, and they want the most extreme version of that thing, and go down these rabbit holes, and there, you know, we find this subculture of, you know, cargo pant sort of hacking type people who are always pushing themselves. Maybe there's even a sort of an underground competitive element.
That's right,
to have the most extreme cargo pants with the biggest pockets, the deepest.
And it's that kind of thing where it's so extreme, you can't buy them. These people have to learn how to make cargo pants, or there has to be just people within the community that make cargo pants for people, you know, and they all become kind of crafts people. And it's the only way. It's like the kind of the furries and the people who dress up as, you know, like as comic book characters and stuff like that. They all have to become manufacturers of their own stuff because there's no legal way that you could. It's actually illegal to have as many pockets. This is where as they're going to have on there, right? And I think where you get
these cargo pants are not street legal.
That's right. Yeah,
you can only wear them on private premises.
And they find ways of disguising the amount of pockets on there. So they like they sometimes have one pocket, but actually inside there's like six pockets in there, and so they disguise it to make them seem street legal, right?
And there's a there's a sort of a secret, their equivalent of a secret handshake is to be you're in the workplace and you're wearing your business suit or whatever, but like you, if you see another guy across the cubicle, you can sort of hitch down the waistband of your pants and reveal the sort of the khaki cargo shorts that you're wearing underneath there, and then you just give each other a little wink.
Yeah, they all have like a sort of a secret like cargo pocket tattoo. You know, maybe they even have pockets tattooed down their arms and legs.
Yeah, and legs. Why did you go with arms?
I know,
to start with?
I know. It seems weird. It seems weird, but this is how deep these people are. They found a pant that goes that has an arm sleeve in it.
How do you feel about this, Alistair? Cargo underpants.
Yeah, I'm really into it. Like boxer shorts that go all the way down. They're like long johns, but with pockets all the way through.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for me, I was thinking regular, like tidy-whitey Y-front style underpants, but just with like lots of pockets hanging off them.
I don't know why, but I feel
I wonder if your silky boxer short cargo pants is probably funny.
I mean, that is
because the
funny
idea of going to bed with lots of shit in your pockets as well.
Yeah, and
such a horrible idea.
And then what happens is that we see this person. You know, we're following somebody in this world, right? And they're getting more pockets. They're getting, you know, sort of, you know, more intense securing methods of like fastening the top
so
you can carry more and more weight, and so they're carrying more and more things in there. But then at some point in this, you know, in their cargo pant wardrobe, there starts to be a smell, right? And this guy can't find where the smell's coming from. There's so many freaking pockets to go through because there's so many pants with so many pockets, right? And then at some point, you know, there's just been some food that's been put in there and something, and these pants have not been worn in an early, you know, prototype model.
Yeah.
Put his hand in there.
It's a real cautionary tale.
You know, some goo, some like a black mold kind of thing that he ends up breathing in. You know, maybe like
he dies and he refuses to reveal to the doctors the whole cargo pants subculture, right? Because the doctors want to know, where did you come into contact with this mold? But because the loyalty within the cargo pant world is so intense, he won't reveal it.
It's a
even to save his own life.
It's a sealed pocket, that world.
Yeah.
Imagine that, a cargo pants with a
I'm
locked pocket.
I'm also picturing cargo hot pants.
Yes, of
you
course.
You know, like very sexy,
but even
gold
pants you
glittery
can wear on your arms. Cargo pants.
The toxic side of this,
and you're not talking about like
culture, would be
the actual mold.
No, not the mold, and I'm not talking about the mold. The toxic side of this is that, like, guys who are really deep into this, they have so many pockets, so big, and so much weight in those pockets, they have to have their belt or their waistband so incredibly tight that it starts to damage their body.
Yeah.
They're losing blood flow to their legs. Their families are like devastated by what they're doing to themselves.
The jangling, the jingle jangling that they would make as they walk because they're carrying so many things.
Mm-hmm. And they have to, they are like, you know, morbidly obese people who have to be lifted out of their houses or something like that. But it's just because of all the weight of stuff that's
it's not their actual bodies, because they're actually
no
keeping quite fit due to all the exercise they're doing. Yeah. But I mean, I guess I guess what this could be is also just like there's an investigation because there's been a death.
Mm.
Right. And then it's the investigation. It looks like a murder, but it's actually a cargo pen accident.
This is an episode of
Strange Unit. Yeah.
They find a body that appears to have atrophied from the waist down. He's been strangled to death, but over a long period of time and in the middle. So it takes a lot longer to strangle somebody.
I mean, that makes you think straight away that it could be cargo pants. For me, that's what that makes me think.
I don't think
it has to be strangled in a strange way where it doesn't make sense.
I don't think
like it has to look like a regular murder, and then you find out that it's some
nobody
super
is
advanced
thinking that. Nobody
neck.
Nobody is thinking it's
Andy.
Cargo pants.
But as soon as you find out about the cargo pant world, you know, like you would go, oh, those are the cargo pants. But if it was like still around the neck, so it seems like it's a regular strangulation, and then you find out it was somebody working on a pair of pants that you wear around your neck, you know, and he flew too close to the sun. He wore pants too close to the neck, if you know what I mean.
And the episode is called Icarus.
Because think about this. Like, you know, drawstrings. Mm. Drawstrings, right? Now, you have to tighten them, right? You have to tighten them forward. The force has to come. Mm. It has to be a kind of a horizontal force. But if the drawstring was being tightened by the downward force, the downward pull of the pants, right? Then those would be self-fastening pants. If you wore really like a lot of stuff in your pockets, you see what I'm saying?
That's
here?
That's a good idea.
Right? But then,
yeah,
let's say exciting. You were trying to get so much room that you had a pair of pants that you would have over your shoulders, but that come up, like, you know, up over your torso, and you fasten around the neck, and then, but then it gets so tight that you choke and die. This is how this man died.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a real tale of hubris.
Hubris, which was the guy's name, Martin Hubris.
Mm. Hubris. Alistair, I've got to go really soon to go pick up my kids. Do you want us to take through the sketches in like 3 minutes? Can you do that?
Okay, here we go. The first one I didn't write down. Second one is Truth Busters. there's just a dash there with an empty space. But after that, it's Truth Busters.
Yeah,
show where you bust true things you don't want to be true.
I got a blank space, baby.
I got a blank space for you.
I'll write the sketch idea down.
Will they wait? Oh, will they, won't they have anal? It's a Ross and Rachel 450th episode. Flesh graffiti people. Andy loved that idea. Starvationarian. Eat those who die of starvation. Only those. Yeah. Then we got nipple hydrocarbon horror movie. I think I took a lot of your ideas and ruined them in this episode, Andy. Then we got computer that writes ones and zeros in cursive. That one I didn't ruin, Andy. See? I left it in its
pure
form.
Yeah.
It's pure.
It's a monument to man's hubris.
There's only one. Find it and change it and fuck up the universe. And then
that would be a great episode of that would be a great new installment. If they're looking for the next idea for Indiana Jones, if they're gonna make number 6, dare I suggest that the Nazis try to get their hands on the one. They want to change the value of one.
They try to find the back end of the universe.
Or they try to – this would be a good idea. Nazis try to find the one true zero, okay? Because at the moment there are zero living Hitlers, and they want to find the one true zero and change it
to one,
to be 100, to get 100 Hitlers, living Hitlers.
And so then that would mean that everything that there's nothing of, there would be 100 of them.
There's 100 of them. That's right. But and that's what happens when you play with these forces beyond man's ability to comprehend.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. They're going to destroy everything in order to just get their dream of 100 living Hitlers. This is such a good idea, Alistair.
I've written it down.
I'm going to text Steven Spielberg. The 1-0. Indiana Jones and the 1-0.
The 1-1-0-1. the 1-true-1-1-0-1. And then change it to 1-1-0 Hitler. Forget it. Then we got...
Okay, I got to go.
And then there's cargo pants, subculture death, and then they change the 1-2-0s.
Yeah, really.
Okay, thanks very much. Oh, yeah. Boom, diddy, boom, diddy, boom, diddy, boom, diddy, boom, 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 diddy, boom, diddy, boom. Thanks so much. We love you.
Thank you so much.
I was on Shut Up a Second. You should listen to that. And Andy is...
We're going to be on Who Knew It with Matt Stewart very soon.
And I was just recorded a new episode yesterday of Who Knew It with Matt Stewart.
Oh, great. I'm really excited for that.
Anyway, take care. Ta-ta. Bye.
And we
love
you.
Bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.